Welcome to Virtual Economy, a podcast about the business of games for the rest of us. We're your hosts. I'm Amanda Farrow.
And I'm Michael Footer.
Each episode, we'll cover the biggest business beats and bring in expert commentary from lawyers, analysts, and industry pros. This is episode 99. Maybe don't abuse Steam's refund system.
Yeah, maybe don't abuse Steam's refund system.
Gross.
Yeah, dicks.
No, that's fair. That's fair. And we are totally going to be talking about that because, man alive, how many years have you and I been talking about this refund system? And we're like, maybe don't abuse it.
Yeah, y'all. Like, it works well. It's a good system 99% of the time.
But it's that 1% of the time where it totally screws over indie developers.
But yeah, we'll get there. We're starting off with some happier, brighter news. EA has announced it is making 5 of its accessibility patents available for the broader game development community. This is pretty cool.
This is very exciting.
Yeah. This is interesting because you've got a AAA publisher who, AAA publishers especially, very, very, very concerned with the bottom line.
Usually, yeah.
Usually. And that is not to say, and you and I have had this conversation before, that not all AAA publishers, are the same. In fact, they are the results of years and years of corporate culture, the people who are currently running those companies.
The values in which those people hold.
And the bottom line. Not,
and the bottom line. But as it turns out, sharing is not just caring, though. It is good for the bottom line because you are helping all boats rise.
Indeed. And I think what really attracted me to this story and why I was really glad to see it is because here you have a big publisher who has been maligned often, sometimes for things that they have done that are not great, and sometimes for guilt by association with people like Bobby Kotick and Activision, and sometimes, for reasons that I don't think are typically fair. But in this case, I think it's important that we not just criticize when there is criticism due, but also shine a light on things that are being done that are good. So EA has launched what's called the Accessibility Patent Pledge. They are offering 5 of their patents to start with. So it's going to grow.
Okay.
5 patents, completely royalty free. And in the pledge itself, it indicates that it is legally binding.
Interesting.
Yeah, there's only one way out of it for them, and we'll talk about that.
So these patents, like you said, it's starting with 3 patents, or 5 patents, sorry, but there are plans to expand on them.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of the big ones in here that I was most excited about was the ping system, which debuted with Apex Legends.
And we talked about when that game launched that was probably one of the coolest things about it. Battle Royale. Yeah, okay, Titanfall universe, but that ping system.
I might have commissioned a piece about this accessibility feature for Game Daily when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
I seem to recall if I didn't do it, I definitely thought very, very hard about doing it.
And we know that it's been adopted by other games.
Yeah,
we know
absolutely.
That Fortnite has liberally borrowed this system. as they are wont to do.
Liberally borrow from many places.
Well, again, I have less. Look, this is just about wherewithal and sustainability, but I don't have an issue with Fortnite's use of the Battle Royale format that was
My problem
is the whole Among Us thing that we talked about, the imposters mode, which takes a small indie developer. But I guess, if they use the patent for the ping system, now they're not going to get sued for it because they can just do it.
I guess that's true. They also have 2 other patents for improving color visibility for those with color vision deficiencies.
Mm-hmm.
Improving contrast ratios, which is huge. Love that. And generating music based on a user's hearing information and stylistic preference to align with a user's hearing issues.
This one I thought was really interesting.
So I want you to dig into that a little bit more, because when we talked about this privately yesterday, it sounded really interesting.
My understanding is, and I don't know what games they've implemented this in, and I wish that they had, in the blog post, flagged which of their games were using these patents,
right?
If any. We know the ping system's obviously in use, and I imagine that the color visibility ones have been used.
I would imagine so.
But I'm not sure about this one. What I took away from the description was that If you have a particular sensitivity to high pitch noises or low pitch noises, you can tell it that, mm-hmm. and it will either pick different music or it will tune the music such that you're not being subjected to either types of music or types of sounds that may be particularly painful, or just simply don't work for you because of issues related to your hearing. It's really neat. Like, I really want to know what games that the others have been featured in, because I think that would help give people an understanding and users an understanding of what they might start seeing in other games. Now, the good news is this is great for small developers.
It's wonderful for small developers.
But I think it's also great, and I'd love to see Ubisoft do some of the same stuff, because they've done, and I don't know if they have any patents, but they've actually pioneered, I don't know, they're not the only ones certainly, but you and I noticed when last November, when we were looking at a couple of Ubisoft games that they loaded up, and I think Assassin's Creed Odyssey Valhalla is a good one, where it starts you off with a text-to-speech guided, here's your accessibility options thing. Like, it's the first thing you see. And you and I both remarked at how cool that was.
It was great. It was a wonderful way to be dropped into the experience, knowing that this is inclusive and accessible for people that have disabilities and mm-hmm. may not be able to interact with the game in those options
should be on by default, because they otherwise should. Somebody has to go into the menus and turn them on, and that might be more difficult for somebody who needs those options to begin with.
Absolutely. And being able and seeing that right from the get-go and having those options enabled right from the get-go is really, it's such an inclusive way mm-hmm. of taking care of disabled gamers.
And for those of us who don't require them, it's
so easy to just
easy to move through that. So it's not intrusive. I love seeing it up front. And look, you know, you and I have talked about how we're not looking to cover Activision and Ubisoft.
Nope.
But this one, those games in particular stand out, and this is an accessibility feature. And while, you know, we're not going to go out of our way to cover news, I think it's important to call out that in terms of the way that's being approached is a best practice.
They honestly do have a number of really great people working in accessibility mm-hmm. at Ubisoft, including Cherry.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I mentioned earlier that EA does leave themselves one out from this legally binding accessibility pledge. And that is if anyone were to sue them for patent infringement or go after them with another patent action, they would be able to cancel that person's right to use the pledges. So essentially, it's just covering themselves. So let's say there's somebody out. It's a CYA. Also, it ensures that, you know, they have a, it's called a defensive termination.
Yeah, I see that.
So that means they would only do it in response to somebody being aggressive with them, which makes sense.
Okay.
But other than that, they won't go out of their way. They're not going to go and cancel it. It's a legally binding pledge.
That's wonderful.
The other thing that was interesting, along with this, EA's chief marketing officer and executive vice president for Positive Play, Chris Bruzzo, did an interview with Games Industry. And obviously the issue of toxicity in the industry is a big one, not just right now, not just last year, but it has been an issue for decades in the industry now.
I mean, it's interesting because before online gaming and before gaming became something that could connect you to people from all around the world, you know, you had to sit in the same space as the people that you were going to, like, hurl insults at. Speaking from experience, you know, they could come over and give you a good tap on the arm, right? Yeah. If you're being an ass.
I think that the toxicity exhibited itself in other ways. It exhibited itself in online forums, because there was healthy dose of that kind of interaction.
I stayed away from that for the most part. I self-insulated from a lot of those spaces because they weren't for me. Quite frankly. So we want to talk about toxicity. That was definitely gatekeeping, was ensuring that, you know, everybody knew that what the standard gamer wasn't me.
Yeah. And I think that helps solidify that shift that you and I have talked about in our marketing panels at PAX, mm-hmm. about this shift from gaming used to be, and we're talking, you know, decades ago, was inclusive. And then you had this shift in the late 80s, early 90s, especially to those.
It was more the mid 90s
to the booby ads, to the, like, the using sex to sell games to underage hormonal boys, and making it seem like the default gamer was your 13 to 25 year old male.
Sure.
When that really wasn't the case. It wasn't the case before.
It's certainly not the case now.
And it wasn't the case at the time, but that kind of marketing did serve to alienate. Anyway, we're getting a little bit off topic, but one of the things I wanted to highlight...
Is it really off topic? We were talking about toxicity. I feel like that's all on topic.
Let me just refocus us then on why we're talking about toxicity.
Okay, fair.
So Chris Bruzzo did this interview with Games Industry, and the topic of corporate culture came up.
Oh, interesting. What did he have to say?
This is the quote from the Games Industry interview. Quote, we're a community of over 10,000 employees. Are we going to have issues? Are there going to be places where some bad actors or toxic environments exist inside the Electronic Arts employment culture? Of course. Once you get to that level, that size of a population, you almost can't avoid it. But just like on the player toxicity side, you have to have a team that investigates complaints and takes action. So yes, we have had to take some significant actions and dismiss employees, etc., over the last several years. And there was that one example of that employee who was let go. I believe he was was he Respawn?
Yes.
And something that he had said over a decade ago, or around a decade ago, came back to haunt him. And EA took action.
Yep.
And this employee was upfront about it and said, yeah, I said these things and they were terrible and I don't stand by these things and I hurt people and it sucks. And this is the decision my employer took. Do I agree with it? No. But do I accept it? Yes. Because, you know, this was brought up and this made people feel uncomfortable in our community and I don't want that.
Right.
So it was this kind of thing where he took responsibility for these things that he said over a decade ago or around a decade ago, but also, you know, admitted that like, yeah, I wish it hadn't fallen out this way. So that was a thing. Here's the weird thing, the interesting thing. So Bruzzo also noted that obviously EA uses a lot of moderation software.
Yes.
And we're going to be talking a little bit about that moving into Investment Interlude.
We are.
But they have about 25 people monitoring code of conduct violations full time. So round the clock.
Interesting.
But that number seemed low to me.
It also kind of seems low to me. But also, when we think about content moderation, we're thinking about it from a social media platform perspective, and EA probably doesn't have that same volume of content.
Right. So the software that they use kind of looks for hateful language in usernames, team names, player names, using the EA Sports example, right? So you can't go out and make a squad of people who, you know, have an offensive name, or else the software is going to catch that.
Sure.
Even if the system were to allow you to do that. Because that word or that arrangement of letters wasn't explicitly prohibited, there is additional software that's checking against that moving forward.
Certainly.
And we know from there was that tweet that went out about blocking a single word on Twitch, right? And all
video.
The different permutations.
It was a video that came out from somebody who has written a number of bot scripts to help keep streamers protected, and talked a little bit about the challenges behind banning a word, because it's never just a word. It is
every
thousands and thousands of permutations that have symbols that are using different ASCII codes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, moderation is really, really challenging.
Yeah, and expect us to come back to this topic over and over and over again, because it is something that has always moved through the gaming industry, especially from the Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3 era when consoles were regular, you know, were fully online.
Yeah.
And online multiplayer became the norm. It's only now, in the past few years, that we are seeing publishers stand up and start to talk about it publicly, because there was this period where they were so afraid of firing bad actors in their communities that maybe they're finally starting to understand that getting rid of cancerous bad actors in your community actually helps your community grow.
Yeah. For more information about that, you can go listen to our episode that we recorded with the wonderful Victoria Tran.
Absolutely.
Where we talked about just that.
Indeed. So, so that's that. Kudos to EA for opening up those patents, looking forward to seeing what they add to that moving forward. But we have an interesting story. Now, Amanda, you dug into this one a little bit. The headline here is Unity Loves Military.
Yeah. This one was weird for me.
So walk me through what happened here.
So as we've talked about, right, a lot of companies, before they end up going public or they're looking to be acquired, are looking to diversify their revenue streams, right? part of that is usually going outside of their domain knowledge or going outside of their domain industry.
So for Unity, we talked about last week with their earnings, how they were growing their non-gaming portion of the portfolio.
Correct.
So they had some eyewear manufacturers, sure. some car manufacturer. So non-gaming companies using the engine, just like Unreal has clients in film and TV
in and entertainment product. As well as product, in addition to into other corporations, including manufacturing. Manufacturing is a really big draw for a lot of these companies that either are working in middleware or they have development platforms, because there's more going on there than just, hey, this is used to make a game. There's also a significant amount of work being done in machine learning, in artificial intelligence. So moving outside of that domain industry is an important way to establish that this company is more than just what it looks like. Unfortunately, it is walking a very tricky path once you start involving the military. So according to sources inside Unity, and this is based on a report that Vice did, penned by Patrick Klepek, it's mm-hmm. excellent, and we definitely linked it. You should read the whole thing. It's fantastic. So according to sources inside Unity, these kinds of government and military contracts have been nicknamed GovTech.
Ew. Yeah. That doesn't taste good in the mouth.
Yeah. So internal comms talk about it and spin it as helping the government to adapt artificial intelligence and machine learning in a number of different projects. So obviously, this is not really what's going on there, because most of the work, from what I understand, is actually being done for the Department of Defense.
Mm-hmm.
I am not American, Mike. So for our non-American listeners, can you tell us what the Department of Defense is?
They blow shit up, Amanda.
Okay, that's what I thought.
So the Department of Defense is ultimately responsible. I mean, obviously you have your Joint Chiefs who are responsible for the actual branches of the military.
Obviously. 100%.
Look, you've seen movies, you know how this works.
It's actually true. That's the only way I actually know how things work. Yeah, so the Department
of Defense is responsible for a lot of things. You've got DARPA that's in there. So you got the research projects. It's the advanced research projects thing. So if you played Metal Gear Solid, you see the DARPA chief, Donald Anderson.
All I can hear is Control in my head. Department of Weird Science.
So the Department of Defense is essentially the civilian piece of the defense operation.
Okay.
Where you've got the military, and then, I mean, I'll look it up. I'll tell you exactly.
No.
I want to look it up.
Okay, well, Mike's looking it up. So anyway, the Department of Defense is like, you know, this is my boomstick, essentially. Yeah. And so Unity is, you know, as a company, kind of leery about talking about stuff like this. They actually provided a list of do's and don'ts to their employees that, you know, when you're talking about GovTech, whatever that happens to be, whichever project it happens to be, you know, do mention that Unity uses AI to improve how the Department of Defense runs simulations and trainings, but don't, and this is a direct quote, discuss any projects that involves the use of simulated or virtual weapons or training to harm another person. Don't talk about that.
Okay, so here we go. So this is hilarious to me. You're going to love this.
Yeah, I love
it. So the Department of Defense is actually, it oversees the military too, because then you have the Joint Chiefs. So I was not quite accurate about that. You should have asked John, not me.
Okay, I asked you because you're an American.
Because I'm American?
You're American, so shouldn't you know these things?
I mean... I don't know what happens inside.
No one's asking about what happens on the inside, Mike. We're asking for, like, an understanding in a very broad sense. Okay,
so I guess the Joint Chiefs were... I don't know if they report to the Secretary of Defense. Is that happening?
Okay, I don't care about the nuts and bolts.
Look, Space Force, man. All I'm saying is Space Force.
But also not
DARPA Chief Donald Anderson from Metal Gear Solid.
Great. We learned something here today. Right. Mike knows literally nothing about how this works.
Look, I didn't serve. I told you you should have asked John.
Sorry, my bad. So let's talk about the Department of Defense for a hot minute and how uncomfortable this is making Unity's employees.
It's making me uncomfortable, too, as I look at their website.
Yeah, so employees are super uncomfortable, as many people that signed on to work at Unity, even though there were a number of them that were like, oh, you know, I know this is naive, but I signed on to do artificial intelligence and machine learning work to make the world a better place. I bought into the marketing. I bought into the spin. And then to get into the company to know that they're actively working on projects with the Department of Defense was pretty much a gut punch for a lot of these staffers, right? Can you imagine being sold a bill of goods and being like, oh yeah, but also, yeah, we're working for the government and we're helping them to teach people to blow people up because we determine who the bad guys are? Oh boy.
So I'm going to just read you the little mission statement of the Department of Defense.
Great. I'm sure I have something in my notes that'll hook into this.
The Department of Defense is America's largest government agency. With our military tracing its roots back to pre-revolutionary times, the department has grown and evolved with our nation. Our mission is to provide the military forces needed to deter war and ensure our nation's security. So as I said, their job is to blow shit up.
Cool.
Spies and shit, I assume. But
as such, they do have some ethical documentation around, you know, adopting artificial intelligence into the Department of Defense, but it's hazy at best. I went and I read some of it and I'm like, wow, this is unclear, but okay. Speaking of lack of transparency, lack of transparency is honestly putting a lot of Unity's employees in a very difficult position. Mm-hmm. So here's a direct quote. Quote, many of my fellow employees are very talented engineers or artists, but I don't think that experience necessarily prepares us to be successful in passively identifying the complex repercussions of advancing certain emerging technologies. So this is a whole conversation around moral philosophy, right? And we're not going to get into the ethics of developing AI and developing machine learning and then having all of that go into, I don't know, war profiteering. Yeah. It's the Department of Defense contracts that are really frustrating people, though, right? Because, I mean, when they sat down, they had this like, town meeting, essentially, with Unity. And there were a number of people that asked, okay, what else is GovTech if it's not just the Department of Defense? And so the only answer they had was, well, we do have this one project.
What was the one project?
I wouldn't say.
No, are you saying it's classified?
It's probably, well, and that's the thing, is that Riccatello, so he's been around
for ages. Does John Riccatello have government clearance?
I would imagine so, potentially. So as CEO, he's been an immovable object, and he's cited that, quote, the contracts for these engagements are very restrictive, so they can't actually share details, even internally, based on security protocol.
I'm trying to figure out, like, how this happens. You're working on a project, and you have no idea. I mean, it's compartmentalization, I guess?
It is compartmentalization, because if you're developing specific technologies, it's not the same thing as developing a specific product.
Right. So, the Department of Defense, which, of course, is the armed forces. And then it's also, you've got DARPA, which is the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. Which is led by DARPA Chief Donald Anderson in Metal Gear Solid.
I really need you to, like, go bury that bone, please.
Metal Gear. Otacon.
Oh, my God.
Meryl!
All right, that's enough from you. So all of this really does feel like a smokescreen, right? Mm-hmm. And one of the things that Patrick ended up uncovering is that in 2020 alone, Unity signed contracts with the military and the government for hundreds of thousands of dollars in 2020 alone, close to almost $1 million, cumulatively speaking. So that almost certainly, and the reason why we're talking about this, is that almost certainly contributed to Unity's closer to positive cash flow situation post-IPO. You will note that in their earnings, they don't talk about their work with the government or with the military. True. I don't think I saw it. Because I looked through those earnings. Interesting. I didn't see that. Maybe it was in their SEC filing and we just didn't. I mean, I don't dig into the 10-Ks.
Yeah. I don't. That's a really good question. I don't remember reading anything either. So look, I mean, the Department of Defense, obviously they do a lot of product development. They do a lot of weapons development. A lot of research into how to kill people effectively, or at least, you know, put the boot of the government on
Honestly, this whole thing just makes me feel very uncomfortable as somebody who's not American. So if we could just move through this, that would be sure. just peachy.
Sure.
So the, one of the last...
We should get DARPA Chief Donald Anderson on the show.
Good God. All right. So one of the things that came up in Patrick's story was that these debates around working with the government and around the whole GovTech contract thing mm-hmm. actually is traceable back to the company's decision to partner with oil and gas company Schlumberger in 2019.
It is such a Schlumberger.
They actually were fined heavily.
Oh.
Because they went like according to the piece, and you should definitely go read the piece, but I'm pretty sure that they went against sanctions against Iran and potentially Syria get oil and gas. So
you're talking about Schlumberger, not Unity. Like John Riccitiello
it's fine. Like, listen, I have no real love for John, but whatever. My point is that this is all traceable back to when this happened and they started partnering with this oil and gas company. It was like it was this slippery slope. So that the backlash to that deal, to the deal with Schlumberger, the oil and gas company, ended up creating, it caused the formation of the Sales Ethics Advisory Council. So the SEAC within Unity.
Okay.
Okay. So the SEAC would vet new projects and hand recommendations to executives, including Riccitiello.
Okay.
Now, Riccitiello is still the last, he makes the call.
Mm-hmm. But right? you've got a group inside who is writing reports and making recommendations.
But those reports are not transparent and they are not given over to regular employees.
Okay.
They're only given to executives. So, so employees are like, they like that the SEAC exists. But they don't like that they don't know what's going on within the SEAC.
So you think they would put out a report each year, even like not fully fully transparent, but something that is like, hey, here are the things that our SEAC does and here are the jobs that...
And it could be that they do have something like that. But honestly, the only way to really quell people's upsets is to give them a lot of information that they probably can't share because of security clearance, because of any number of things.
Which, as we know, not just the gaming industry, but politics in general, like, people don't shut up.
No. They really
don't.
So
this is a tricky situation because as much as you might want to, as an executive, be transparent, there are some things you literally can't. Now, if you're taking on government projects... then you're gonna have
some... At what point does it veer into... So let's move into the talking points here. So we've talked a little bit about Unity venturing outside of gaming.
Which is normal.
It's normal. That's a normal thing that we've seen with platforms and especially with middleware. The other thing I want to talk about outside of diversifying their revenue streams is war profiteering.
And here's the question, you know... Look, the reality of the situation is that the American Department of Defense, the United States Department of Defense, blows shit up, right? Yeah. They, this is where our military is. This is where a lot of the aggressive stuff that the United States does comes from. The stated mission, though, of the Department of Defense is also to...
avoid war.
Avoid war, and also, and they provide resources, like the DOD is probably going to be involved in the cleanup from Ida in some way.
Sure.
So
like for me, mm-hmm. as somebody who is outside of, you know, growing up American and obviously adopting the very pro-military stance, I grew up very anti-military. No one in my family outside of my great-grandfather served in the military, certainly not in recent years. And it's not that it was distasteful. It was just we want to keep the peace. I was always encouraged to take care of people, and taking care of people doesn't necessarily involve me having a firearm.
Mm-hmm.
So from my perspective, it's not that working with the government is bad necessarily, right? Working with governments can help open things up so that, or provide better understanding so that everybody benefits.
Mm-hmm.
I'm struggling to understand how in this case everybody would benefit.
Yeah. And I think the fact that specifically it's DOD makes it it makes it really challenging.
It makes it really squicky for people that are pretty heavily anti-military. People like me. I would not be able to work for a company that worked with the military.
Well, and this is something that's come up with Microsoft and Amazon, where you've had employees who are like, look, we don't want you taking these jobs where it's going to be government you're going to be doing tech that leads to government surveillance. Or it was Azure with Microsoft, wasn't it? It was enabling the military. And I think you've got employees who took issue with it. The question is here is how much information should employees get to make an informed decision about their own ethics and how they align with their employers or potential employers?
They honestly should have the broad strokes. They might not need all the details, but they need to have the broad strokes in order to better align themselves with the work, or to leave and to find work in the industry or outside of the industry in tech. You know, that's going to be more aligned with what they need.
Yeah, if you're someone who joined Unity to help work on an engine that's used to make video games, and then suddenly your work's being used for defense.
Yeah, that's really tough. It's not even necessarily venturing outside of gaming that's the hard thing. It is we're not just using this in entertainment, we're not just using this for manufacturing or to potentially model, like using an architecture firms or something to use to model a house or something. Like, this is something that is going to potentially be actively used to harm other people. Yeah. And that's really difficult to wrap your head around, because at what point do you look at that work and say, why are we the arbiters of this? How did this become what it is? And that leads us into our final talking point, is what does this mean for the future?
I think that the executives need to make a decision. They need to make a determination about who they want Unity to be. And I think they need to be upfront with candidates. They need to be upfront with employees and to the best of their ability, because it's really tough.
It is hundreds of thousands of dollars in contracts. It's not like these are just piecemeal. This is a lot of money. And unfortunately, the best way to make a lot of money in technology is to align yourself with people that are going to weaponize it.
Yeah. And ultimately, so I think this comes down to, who does Unity want Unity to be?
It's tough, because in this story, you know, Riccatello was saying, like, I don't want to put Unity in this position where, you know, we're not living up to our values. And it's like, okay, but your values were better understandable before you started working with the Department of Defense. Mm-hmm. Like, I could understand it. Speaking to a number of different employees at Unity over the years, I got a good understanding of what Unity stood for. I don't know what Unity stands for anymore.
Yeah. Well, time will tell. And how they move from here is, it's going to be telling.
It's going to be challenging. So, you know what? If you work at Unity, I hope that you're okay.
Yeah.
Genuinely, I hope that you're okay.
So, moving on, it's time for Investment Interlude, where we talk about mergers and acquisitions, and we got a SPAC story today.
Oh man, I love SPAC stories.
But we are kicking off, actually, with another Unity story. Now, this one's good, and this is an interesting juxtaposition with the story we just talked about. Yeah. Unity has acquired OTO, which is, quote, an AI-driven acoustic intelligence platform that can be used to help create safer environments for players. OTO is going to be integrated into Unity-owned Vivox.
Awesome.
And the idea is that OTO can detect not just text, but also voice chat, and can help curb toxic behavior.
That's wonderful.
So Unity also conducted a survey alongside the Harris Poll that drives home the point that online toxicity is a growing problem, as if we needed data to back up what we have known anecdotally. But the data's good, right?
Data's always good. What do we say between the two of us all the time? Feed me more data.
Yep, more data. So nearly 7 in 10 players, at 68%, defined as those who have played multiplayer games in the past year, said they've experienced toxic behavior while playing multiplayer games, and that includes sexual harassment, hate speech, threats of violence, and doxing.
Nearly half of players, so that's 46%, say that they at least sometimes experience toxic behavior while playing multiplayer video games, with 21% reporting it every time or often.
Mm-hmm. 67% of players were very or somewhat likely to stop playing a multiplayer video game if another player was exhibiting toxic behavior. I'm in that camp. It turns me off.
I am also in that camp. I actually don't play multiplayer games with people I don't know anymore.
Yeah.
I used to play, like, especially if I was playing with my dad, because my dad and I used to play a ton of MMOs together. So we used to join up, like, guilds and stuff in some of these MMOs. And the big difference is that my dad would introduce himself first and then introduce me as his daughter. So I was already spoken for, mm-hmm. essentially. And that helped curb a lot of the toxicity in those days. But I'm a grown ass woman now.
Yep.
And let me tell you, I don't play with randoms anymore, ever. 92% of players think solutions should be implemented and enforced to reduce toxic behavior in multiplayer games.
So essentially what we've got here is we've got Unity that's worked with Harris Poll to gather some data around the real impact of toxicity.
Exactly.
The fact it happens, the results, and the fact that people are looking for a call to action here and have it fixed. And hopefully OTO, which is going to be integrated, as we said, into Vivox, is going to be a way for any developer working on Unity to build in some tools that not just curb the rampant
text nonsense.
And we talked about this when we had our conversation with Raven. Mm-hmm. You know, all of the text-based crap that's happening, but also being able to bridge that over to machine learning and AI-based voice chat moderation.
Yeah.
That's huge.
That's enormous.
Terms of the deal were not disclosed, but the deal has in fact closed already. It closed on August 12th.
Nexters, the developer of mobile PvP RPG Hero Wars, has gone public through a SPAC acquisition.
Yeah.
This is your very regular reminder of what a SPAC is. Mm-hmm. A SPAC stands for Special Purpose Acquisition Company.
And the way it works is you've got a shell company, effectively, that goes out and they raise money with the intention of going public and making an acquisition, but the investors don't really know what company they're going to acquire.
So they gotta roll the dice.
They gotta roll the dice. In this case, Nexters has partnered with Kismet Acquisition One Corp to go public via SPAC. The stock is being traded under the ticker symbol GDEV.
GDEV. Nexters and SPAC shareholders will receive $132 million from the deal, with funding intended to support new projects, expand into additional casual genres, launch games in new markets, and sign deals with other companies.
I pulled this out because I thought it was ambitious. Nexter says it wants to become, quote, the leading consolidator in the gaming industry of Russian-speaking countries, Eastern Europe, and other markets.
Okay, I have questions.
Yes.
In fact, I have one question.
What's a consolidator?
What in the heck is a consolidator?
I can only think of something like maybe Embracer Group.
Grom, nom, nom,
well,
nom,
yeah,
nom,
that's
nom,
exactly
nom.
It. So I'm wondering, but it's like, but we want Embracer, Russian-speaking countries, we want the rest of Eastern Europe and everywhere else.
So, I feel like Saber and Embracer already kind of have the market cornered in Russian-speaking countries because of a lot of the Russian developers that they work with.
Oh, and they've acquired a couple of companies that are based in the old USSR and currently Russia.
Certainly. So there was, like, when I've talked to Matt a couple of times, right? Mm-hmm. And we talked about in our last conversation how he really wanted to start a company that would be able to marry his love of Russia,
mm-hmm.
and Russian language.
So from Russia with love.
Yeah, sort of. Sure. Mm-hmm. And gaming.
Huh.
So that's how he and his business partner ended up starting up Saber, like, almost 20 years ago.
Interesting.
So like I said, I feel like they've kind of got the market cornered there, but I mean, more competition is good.
Mm-hmm.
All right. WePlay Ventures has made a $170,000 investment into Affic Games. Affic is a mobile developer with a number of iOS and Android releases under its belt, including Pillow Party, Stack and Hit, Hold the Ladder, and more.
I won't say that these titles are terribly interesting or innovative, though.
I don't know. Pillow Party sounds pretty great. I love the idea of playing a pillow fight simulator. It sounds like fun. Anyway, the studio's first PC title is a horror game called Deadly Broadcast.
Deadly Broadcast.
Mike's way better at it. Is currently in development with scheduled release in February of next year.
And we'll round out Investment Interlude today with a story about former Alchemy Labs team leaders Alex Schwartz and Cy Wise. Their current company, Absurd Joy, has raised $5.35 million for a co-working app called Tangle. Now, there was a video that I saw of what Tangle is, and it looks like it's designed for remote work.
Yes.
And it's more visual than Slack or Discord. And it looks like you're in an office. Like, there's a lot of different places you can go on the screen.
It's like a virtual office space.
Yeah, and you can congregate in different groups, and you can leave the door open so anybody can kind of drift into the conversation or drift out.
It really reminds me of the technology that Boston Fig used for when we were doing that particular... I mean, like, it's more robust because obviously it's meant to be used for smaller teams rather than, you know... 100+ people, right. I would imagine.
And you can close, if you're in a room, you can close the door and lower the blinds if you want to have a private meeting. Mm-hmm. So you can have a private conversation with somebody. I also really liked the idea that it uses AR and avatars so that you don't have to be on camera. In fact, if you talked to a lot of people who were on Zoom meetings, there's a lot of Zoom fatigue that happened. And people don't want to, like, I don't want to be on camera because I'm just not having a good day.
Sure.
Or and I don't want to spend the effort. I want to focus on my work and not spend the effort on how I look.
Sure. And I think that there is a lot of power in that. And part of the reason why we see streamer fatigue is for the same kinds of reasons where it's just you're always on.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, I mean, I feel like Zoom fatigue and streamer fatigue go, that goes hand in hand.
Yeah. So it also looks, you know, we talked about the Slack and Discord comparison. It also looks from a Zoom perspective way more interactive.
Yeah,
it
has Zoom that. Very corporate.
It has that AR kind of. You can see people's mouths moving. The mouths moving. The avatars look like them. So you still get that impression of you're talking to a person, mm-hmm. not just their name with their initials like on Zoom when someone doesn't turn their camera on. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit more personal. And they've been testing it. They've had more than a dozen other teams using it over the past few months. So I'm really interested to see where this goes. It's very cool.
Absolutely. The seed round was led by March Gaming with participation from Dune Ventures, WXR Fund, Gangels, Unity founder David Helgeson, and others. This follows a pre-seed round with funding from Ed Fries of 1UP Ventures and WXR Fund.
And that wraps us for Investment Interlude.
And now it's time for a break. Virtual Economy is an F-Squared initiative, and along with pro bono business consulting for up-and-coming developers, it's a way we are working to give back to the community that has already given us so much. To find out more about F-Squared and the services we can provide, including pitch prep, media training, mock reviews, and business strategy guidance, visit our website at fsquared.biz. And we're back!
And it's time for Quick Hits!
All right. Intelligence group Newzoo has released a new report on cloud gaming's trajectory. I love Newzoo. The group predicts that this segment will generate 6.5 billion bells globally by the end of 2024, with 60.7 million paid users engaging with one or more cloud gaming platforms. Newzoo says that by the end of 2021, there will be 23.7 million paid cloud users. Holy smokes, this does seem to include Game Pass Ultimate subscribers, which, I mean, skews it a little.
Yeah, because I don't know that you could say, like, hey, every Game Pass Ultimate subscriber has tried Xbox Cloud Gaming.
Which is, yeah.
Or uses it on an active basis.
Right. Usually, like, so, for instance, my dad doesn't mm-hmm. have an Xbox, mm-hmm. right? Still has Xbox Game Pass, or still has Game Pass Ultimate, because... he wants to play them on his computer.
Yeah.
Right? And it's still the best deal in gaming. Mm-hmm. Goodness gracious. But yeah, having Game Pass in there, Game Pass Ultimate specifically, is definitely going to skew the numbers a bit.
Yep. Not, and we'll see how the adoption and usage pans out as
feed
we move forward.
Me data.
Exactly. Gearbox has opened a new studio in Montreal, Quebec. The Embracer Group owned company says this is a $200 million Canadian dollar investment in Quebec that will add 250 jobs.
Nice.
And this puts Gearbox total headcount at about 850. And I think this is in addition to their Quebec studio that they have already.
Yeah.
The reason why I say that, this studio is going to be led by Sebastian Case, PhD, and Pierre-André Derry. Both of them were co-studio heads of Gearbox Quebec since October 2015.
So they are moving over
to start yet another studio for Gearbox.
Got it. Developers from Riot and Stunlock Studios, which was recently acquired by Tencent, have teamed up to form a new studio called Box Dragon. The new team is based in Gothenburg. Is it Gothenburg?
Gothenburg.
Gothenburg, Sweden. My apologies.
It's okay.
And is already working on its first game with support from Embracer Group-owned Coffee Stain. The new studio is led by game director Kevin Chang, tech director Carl Bergstrom, and art director Alex Nikonov.
Netflix is soft launching its games offering in Poland.
Interesting.
This week they announced that Stranger Things 1984 and Stranger Things 3 both became available in that country via the Netflix Android app. Oh. Netflix has committed to no ads, no in-app purchases, and that games will be included with existing Netflix memberships.
Very interesting. So, here's something really cool, Mike.
What's that?
Speaking of Xbox Cloud Gaming.
Yes.
Xbox Cloud Gaming will finally arrive on consoles this holiday season.
So that's really interesting. So we're now completing the ecosystem here. It's available on PC. It's available on mobile.
Yep.
And now it's going to be available on consoles, which is very cool. There's a new educational event happening inside Fortnite, and we're seeing some, I would call them metaversal growing pains.
Yes.
The event is in partnership with Time, and it's called March Through Time DC63. Inside the event, players can watch Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s I Have a Dream speech on a recreation of the Washington, D.C. Mall. However, bad actors are always at play because Fortnite is, at its heart, a video game, even if it is transitioning to a platform or metaverse. They had already disabled some emotes, but there were people who were using other emotes very disrespectfully, so they shut off all but, I think, 8 emotes.
Right.
So that's, look, on one hand, I will be the guy that says, you know, okay, I can understand. You're bringing something to an audience that might not go and seek out this kind of education. They might load up Fortnite. Oh, what's this thing? I'm going to go look at it. But if you're not doing the contextual prep, and this is the thing about education, you can't just slap something like this in front of an audience and expect them to get it.
Not even just in front of an audience, in front of children.
You need to have some kind of context. Now, if this was, I know why it's happening now. Obviously, it's the anniversary of the March Through Washington.
Certainly.
However, if you're not partnering with schools, if you're not partnering with curriculum experts, I know that they partner with Time on this.
They need educators.
Yes.
Because educators and people that actively work, not just with children, but that work in education, have literal master's degrees a lot of the time in education and could have helped further this. This is why Games for Change specifically is such an important piece of the convention cycle, of the conference cycle every year, because you get to see what edutainment looks like, how much it's grown. You can attend panels that will, you know, give you a broader understanding of what education in video games could be.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, this is not what it's supposed to look like.
Yeah, and I think that what's tough is this is in August. Our school just started today. Some schools aren't starting till next week. The timing on this is appropriate because of the anniversary, but at the same time, if you're not partnering with educators, you know, if this was something that was being taught in a social studies class, and this was in Fortnite's hip pocket, and they could give access to educators at a different point in the year, there would be something really interesting about this.
Like Minecraft education.
Exactly.
Does. Like if there was Fortnite education.
And there it is.
That could be really cool because it completely insulates that part of the experience and allows for new interesting things to be done within the Fortnite metaverse that could be conducive to different kinds of learning. You know me, right? I love games. I love games with children, for children, education in video games. I love all of it. It's all great. But this was a mess.
Yeah,
this was
that's
a
like
big mess.
That is like cutting up steak and putting it on top of a bowl of ice cream.
Gross.
Exactly. I think you're mixing two things that probably don't belong together and aren't effective together.
But would you put steakums on your
You
ice
stop
cream?
This. I am sorry I opened this door. I am very sorry I opened this door.
Oh God, so am I. We're going to close it now though. And we're going
to
move on.
But anyway, just to close this, I think you're right. I think Fortnite, if it wants to do more things like this, it needs to have an educational branch that it works with educators on. Mm-hmm. Use Minecraft education as a model. And by the way, I was super critical of Minecraft education when it was announced because it did not have any standards associated with it. It did not
now
have
it
any.
Does.
And now it does. It didn't have any rubrics associated with it.
Now
How
it does.
Do you measure success using this? And I wrote a relatively sharp piece when I was at Game Informer about how it was a good idea that ultimately did not follow through. And did not, what?
You wrote a lot of sharp pieces when you were at Game Informer.
Don't call me out like this.
I'm sorry, but I'm also not sorry at all.
You know who wouldn't call me out like this? Yeah. DARPA Chief Donald Anderson. He wouldn't.
I hear that guy's a big jerk.
He did.
He did. Okay. We need to move on.
Yes.
Before I go buy Mike Steakums and put it on his ice cream. Discord founder and CEO Jason Citrin chatted with the Financial Times. In the interview, he is quoted as targeting a $15 billion valuation as the company heads toward its goal of an IPO. The company is currently worth $7 billion, but it had taken a
But
rumor-
had it.
But had it, sorry. Yep. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Had it taken the rumored offer from Microsoft, the price tag might have been around $12 billion.
And we had talked about this back when that was all going on, that the valuation of around $10 billion was what we had thought, and then the rumored Microsoft offer was $12 billion. Right. That was an overvaluation of where Discord was.
Correct.
And this kind of seems to confirm, but they want to get to $15 billion and go public.
And look, power to them, genuinely. We use Discord every day, but they have a long way to go.
They're
trying to get there because they have issues with a lot of things, including moderation.
Indeed. And, well, we're done. And those were quick hits.
I thought you were going to be like, and then you were going to launch in and to the, anyway.
No.
That was very silly.
All right, we've got a few stories to chat about before we wrap up for the day.
Let's start off with the update coming out of Activision Blizzard.
Yeah, we're going to keep doing this every week as long as there is something to talk about. But there are two things to float this week. The first is that the Overwatch team has announced they are changing the name of the cowboy, I guess formerly known as Jesse McCree, named after a Blizzard employee who was ousted for contributing to that company's toxic work environment.
The new policy that they have enacted is that they will not, in fact, name new characters after people working at the company.
Yeah, so there's a lot of scrubbing that needs to be done in World of Warcraft, apparently, because it wasn't just Afrasiabi, it was a lot,
and quite frankly, that's creatively sloppy. It is extremely sloppy, and honestly, that does speak to the fact that there were not more diverse people at the table, because if... you know, more people were consulted about that, they would have said, this is very silly, and this is not in line with what we want in our game.
Well, and quite frankly, I can picture somebody sitting in that room uncomfortable and unable
exactly.
to speak up because they would have been shut down because the people who are the managers and the directors who are the people whose names are going in the game would take it personally and then make their lives hell based on what we know.
You know who else is making Activision Blizzard's life hell right now?
Oh, who?
The Department of Fair Employment and Housing in
California. Ah, yeah, they is.
They really are. They're really unhappy mm-hmm. with Activision Blizzard. The lawsuit now also includes contract workers.
Yeah, the term was changed from employees to workers. In the filing.
I really like that. Considering the absolutely scathing piece that Nicole Carpenter over at Polygon penned a couple mm-hmm. of weeks ago.
Absolutely.
It was, quite frankly, it was excellent work, but it was scathing mm-hmm. because this is everything that we understand about contract workers in this industry is that they are consistently undervalued. I love that the DFEH is standing up for them and saying this is not okay.
Absolutely.
So the DFEH has alleged that Activision Blizzard's engagement... this is an addition. So their engagement of Wilmer Hale, quote, directly interferes with the DFEH's investigation.
Yeah, and the fact that Wilmer Hale, they believe that essentially it will obstruct their investigation. It will make it harder for them to investigate.
You know what else makes it kind of difficult to investigate? When HR shreds documents.
Yes, so that is another allegation that is in the updated DFEH filing that HR...
brought to our attention from Axios,
yes,
by the way.
Actively shredded documents. Of course, Activision Blizzard denies these allegations, says they've done everything to cooperate. But you know what? After all of their corporate statements, I mean, Activision Blizzard corporate comms is a wet fart.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. It's just...
Well, that's the first time we've done that on this show, but Activision Blizzard brings out the bowels in us, I guess.
And moving on.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Apple.
Apple working hard to do the bare minimum in hopes of protecting its App Store empire. So here's the deal. So there were a number of lawsuits, and we're not talking about the Epic lawsuit right now. We're talking about another lawsuit that was brought by a number of smaller app developers.
Mm-hmm.
Apple's trying to settle the lawsuit and says, okay, what if we let you tell people that they can get a better deal on whatever it is you're selling. But Ooh. You have to go outside. So remember the whole thing with WordPress, and we talked about it on the show,
yes.
where WordPress is like, Apple's telling us we're not even allowed to tell people that there's a special. Like, that people can go to our website and purchase services or purchase whatever.
I'm sure that Matt Mullenweg is very happy about
this. Yeah, so this does not allow people to actually charge lower amounts in the App Store. Because anything through the App Store right now still requires the in-app purchases. It requires Apple's processing, so it goes to the 30% or...
I'm feeling the need to make more mouth fart noises.
Well, yeah.
Because it gets worse.
So this is just a baby step, which is not the way I originally saw it reported, but we're not going to talk about that because I'm not looking to throw an outlet under the bus for shitty reporting.
No. Nope.
But it was shitty reporting.
And it was not... a gaming outlet,
no,
just to be clear.
But it was an outlet that should have known better, and it was terribly inaccurate reporting.
It was very bad.
So that report has since been fixed with no update, which I have another issue with, but that's something else. So the Coalition for App Fairness, which should sound familiar because Epic helped co-found it, issued a statement calling Apple's settlement offer a, quote, sham. Shocking.
Not a sham wow.
But a sham wow.
It's been a long week and it's only Monday.
Billy Mays for OxyClean here.
ShamWow! Okay, speaking of not ShamWow,
yes.
This is more like Sham. Oh.
All right, we finally come to it.
We have.
Our conversation about the Steam refund policy.
Oh boy. Okay, so let's lay a little bit of foundation here.
Yes.
So what happened?
So this all came to rise. I think it was PC Gamer that flagged this story.
That's not surprising.
Yeah, so Emeka Games is the name of a solo developer studio. This developer's name, I had to dig for this, and it was another outlet that found it. Alexander Reshetnikov is apparently the solo developer behind Emeka Games.
Okay.
He's a horror developer.
Ooh.
He's released three games.
Ooh.
The most recent is called Summer of 58.
Okay.
And his philosophy is, I want games to last about as long as a movie. I don't want to pad it. I don't want to, you know, puff it up. I just want to go in and have a really, like, intense experience.
And that, structure it in such a way that people can get in, they can get their little bite, and they can get out.
Yes. So Summer of 58 is relatively short. I think it can be finished in around 90 minutes. Now, as you may be aware, Steam's refund policy is...
2 hours.
2 hours or 2 weeks.
Right.
As long as you haven't spent 2 hours in the game and you purchased it within the last 2 weeks, you can get your refund. Now, it is...
99% of the time, as we said.
That's perfectly reasonable.
It works as intended, and it's meant to protect consumers from games that are broken or that don't work.
Like, you can go into a game that should work on your computer, it's terribly buggy, I don't want this anymore. Cyberpunk, for instance, when it launched, people could have been like, no?
Yeah, hard pass.
Yeah.
And that's understandable. But where things get really dicey isn't for the AAA developers.
Yeah.
It's for the indies.
So Reshetnikov put out, or the Emeka Games Twitter account put out, I'm taking an indefinite break. There's another game I'm working on. I don't know if it's going to come out at all because I don't have the means. Like, it was translated. Like, essentially, I don't have the means because all these people who are giving this game mostly positive reviews on Steam are finishing the game in 90 minutes and going, ha, 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 I don't have to pay the $9 or whatever for this game. Then I'm going to refund it. Now, $9, by the way, you go to a movie theater, and assuming you don't buy popcorn or a drink or anything, I'm looking at you, Matt, on your popcorn.
Excuse everything.
Calling you out.
That's okay. I called you out for being a sharp so-and-so in your Game Informer days.
I mean, what? $12 for a movie ticket these days. You spend $9 for an interactive game that took one person however long to make, and you're like, I didn't get my money's worth? So you're going to refund it?
Yeah. So that's garbage.
It is. Like, that is supremely shitty.
It's really not okay. And I mean, he did say that he's not upset at people refunding for actual problems. Like,
you know,
if they had actual problems
they didn't
in the game,
like
or if
it?
They didn't like it.
Yeah,
sure.
He's like, fine, refund the game.
But if you're giving the game a positive review and you're still asking for a refund or getting your money refunded, you need to give your head a shake because that is going to hurt the developer that You liked their game.
Yeah. Don't you want to see more?
Why not monetarily support them? It's like, that's the whole thing that you and I have talked about for a number of years on Steam. It's the race to the bottom.
Yeah.
It's been the race to the bottom.
Well, and that was the problem with mobile gaming. That has been the problem.
It's better now.
It is better now.
On mobile, because we have separate premium offerings that are considered, you know, these are the darlings. These are the ones that are worth investing in. And maybe you get Apple Arcade to play them, or maybe you purchase them all out for a premium price, but everything else is free to play. So whatever.
Yeah.
You know, there isn't really anything in the middle. It's either you are paying, you know, $5-$10 for a gorgeous indie game that you can play on your tablet or on your phone, or it's a free-to-play experience. And they're both very different on mobile, so it feels less and less like a race to the bottom on mobile, but it's definitely hasn't changed on Steam. It's gotten worse.
And you and I have talked about pricing, and we're going to have this conversation a little bit. So, Emeka Games put out there were like three different notes. There was the first one, which was clearly coming from a place of hurt. There was a second one that said, I just want to be really clear, I'm not upset about people who are refunding this for legitimate reasons.
Yeah.
And then there was one that said that, you know, the story did get a lot of attention. It got picked up by other places, which is great. There was a lot of support.
Great.
I mean, I know, look, I'm about supporting developers. I don't know if I will ever play these games, but I picked up the bundle for like $20 of all three of the games.
I'm 100% going to pick them up and I'm going to play them.
Yeah.
Because I love weird indie horror games.
So apparently Summer of 58's really good. So there's a good chance I will play it, but even if I don't, like, I don't feel bad about making the purchase. Now, here's the interesting thing you said. The attention has been both positive and negative. There have been some people who've been accusing him of being a fraud.
What? Or something.
Like, I don't understand that. You don't put out go on.
You know what my thought on that is? Mm-hmm. It's because they would do that. They would, if you are accusing somebody of doing that, it is likely because that is the route that you would take.
And you and I have had that conversation about politics in general, about the accusations saying more about the accuser than the accused.
And I mean, not always the case, of course, but in this particular instance, if you're accusing someone of being fraudulent or even committing fraud, in this case where it is like, no, the developer's really hurting here.
Mm-hmm.
And assuming neutral or good intentions from people seems to be a fairly reasonable way to go until you know more about them.
Mm-hmm.
And from what we understand about this story, it is not coming from a place of give me more money. This is coming from a place of you guys liked this game.
Yeah.
And I can't even keep it go. I can't even keep myself going because I've had to deal with all these refunds because you're abusing the system that is that was put in place to protect you.
Now, here's the thing. And when this popped up, the first game I thought of was Bithel Games' Subsurface Circular.
Fantastic. Fantastic bite-sized game.
And, you know, just as full disclosure, my books were published by Bithel Games. I have a little bit of insight here. But I also think that the refund rate, and I think they came out and talked about this publicly. They did? Okay.
They did.
I think it was like under 2% or something like that.
Mike actually tweeted about it. He had a full thread. I think it was a couple of months after Subsurface Circular came out. It could have been at the end of the quarter he talked about it. But this was something he did talk about publicly. And he's not shy in talking about numbers. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things I like about Mike.
And this is something I know that Alexander Slewinski, who is the chief operating officer at Bithel Games, and Mike Bithel, were very worried about with Subsurface Circulars. They knew that it was, for many people, going to come in under that two-hour mark. So what they did up front was acknowledged it. And they said, look,
it was actually a marketing beat.
It was. It was really, really smart because it made people aware of it. And it also created that little bit of shame, that little bit of guilt for people who might have considered doing what was done with Summer of 58. And again, the reviews on Summer of 58 versus what Emeka Games is saying is where the friction here is. And I wonder if he had done the same thing. This is a game you are going to finish in approximately 90 minutes.
But he's a solo developer. A solo developer who probably doesn't have someone that he can lean on to talk about these kinds of things. To really, you know, be able to provide advice. But here's the thing, folks. If you find yourself in that kind of a situation and you do need advice, hi, we're here.
Yes.
You can DM us and talk to us and set up a time, especially if you are a very tiny development studio or you're a solo developer and you need someone to bounce those ideas off of. Seriously, come talk to us. Let us help you with that. And we're pro bono for, like, 99% of indie developers. It's really only after you've taken funding that, you know, we charge for our services. But otherwise, we're pro bono. So, like, talk to us. If you can't talk to anyone else, talk to us.
Yep. So Summer of 58, the regular price is $9.
That's a good price.
Which is under $10.
Like you said, this is, if we're absolutely comparing it to a theatrical experience, listen, your girl can't go to the movie theaters for less than $20 by herself.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do need the popcorn, and I absolutely need my root beer.
There it goes. So, I mean, there's a conversation to be had about pricing and whether that price is too high, too low. Does it hit right? I think that's a much bigger conversation.
It's a psychological thing, too.
It is a psychological thing.
Considering the conversation that you had, not just with Rami Ismail, but you had with, I think, who else was on that panel?
Gwen Fry was on that panel.
Gwen was there, and...
Oh, my goodness. Shoot.
There was one other person that was on that panel. I found that panel fascinating.
Yeah, it was a great panel.
It was also very funny that Rami hates the number 7.
He does. That was really funny. So I have my own thoughts about the pricing there. I don't think the pricing, if it's not dead on, I think it's very close. I think it's under $10, and that's definitely what I would recommend charging
right.
for this game.
Yeah.
But again, when you compare it against a non-interactive experience like going to a movie theater or watching a movie at home, hell, people are paying $30 to watch theatrical movies in their home. So I think...
We recently paid $20 to watch The Green Knight at home.
We did. So my feeling on this is it's a communication issue. And I think that the reality of the situation is, and as we've said multiple times, Steam's refund policy works like 99%+ of the time. It's only when you run into a situation like this, and should there be something in the policy that could help developers with shorter games? Okay, sure. Now, if you use something like How Long to Beat, that could be gamed because that's all community responses. Every time, you know, there's real
honestly,
users feed into that. So that's not going
to
work.
The big thing here, it really does boil down to communication. You can circumvent these issues somewhat by being very upfront about this is how long it is going to take in order to play this game. And if it's, especially if you're erring on the short side of an experience, I don't see the harm in just coming out and owning it and saying this is going to be an afternoon, an evening, mm-hmm. and you will enjoy.
The last thing you want is somebody to get to the end of the game and roll credits and go, wait, that's it? And be caught off guard by that. And I think that's one of the things that the Subsurface Circular story teaches us is that if you're upfront and you set expectations that, hey,
that is,
you are purchasing a game. Yeah, that's communications, as you said. You're setting expectations. And I think there are a couple of things that could be done differently, whether it's for Emeka Games or another developer with a shorter experience moving forward. And I think if it's me, my communication here is for less than the price of a movie ticket, you're getting a horror movie experience.
That's going to control.
Yeah, and it's going to take you about the length of a horror movie, less than the price of a movie ticket. And I think there are ways to communicate that in a way where you are setting expectations and you are circumventing the ability for people you're going to trip the guilt circuit. So people don't.
Yeah, no, and it's true. But also, not everybody has, you know, a ton of experience with marketing.
Sure.
Like you and I do.
Right,
so,
but that's why we're here. So
like...
Call us.
Yeah, for real. Please call us.
Yeah.
We've got you.
Yep. Just send an email. We have a form on our website. If seriously, this is...
We're not joking around.
We have a form on our website. If you want to make contact, you can always shoot us an email at podcast@fsquared.biz or hello@fsquared.biz. And we'll be glad to chat with
you.
Yeah,
we don't want any developers to get stuck in this kind of communication fiasco again. Like, it's just...
Yeah.
You all work so hard to create beautiful things, and communicating the beauty of your beautiful thing is sometimes very hard. So sometimes it's good to have an extra set of brains that can, you know, help you suss that out. So anyway... Yeah. Thank you for listening.
Yes.
To the Virtual Economy Podcast.
This was episode 99.
Holy crap. 99 episodes.
Not counting the 0th episode or the bonus episodes. This was episode 99.
Yeah, we've been really gaming this system.
We've been gaming this system.
Speaking of gaming systems, we've been gaming our own system. But yeah, so episode 100, we were originally going to get on Twitch. We're shooting for 105 now.
Yeah, we're waiting on some stuff. We have plans. Things move slower than you hope they're going to. So you just
got
to roll
with
it. You got to be nimble.
It's just the summer. It's the summer of 21. So We're just doing what we can do. So anyway, you can follow us on Twitter at Virtual Econcast. I am at Amanda Farrow.
And I am at Footerish, F-U-T-T-E-R-I-S-H.
You can subscribe to our RSS feed at virtualeconcast.com. We are also available on all major podcasting platforms, including Spotify, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Pocket Casts. I always forget the last
Pocket
one.
Sand!
Damn that Pocket Sand.
Yeah, so please do subscribe, and if possible, review the show. We'd love to know what you think.
Send us love letters.
Yes, and you can do that at podcast@fsquare.biz. You can DM us at Virtual Econcast. You can hit us up on Twitter. You can
ask us for our super secret numbers, because, you know, we have Signal as well. So if you have information for us about a story or a lead, or you are a part of some ongoing challenges at a number of different studios and you just need to talk about it with somebody who gets it, you know, we're here.
Yeah. And if you'd like to be part of the F Squared community, you can hit us up for a Discord invite. We'd be glad to share that with you. If you're interested in supporting the show, we are moving towards, we still would really, really, really love to get transcripts of all of our episodes. We have a Ko-fi. That's ko-fi.com/virtual economy. We'd love your support.
And you can buy us stickers.
You can buy
too.
Stickers. We're going to be doing a little bit more with that as we move forward. But for now, that wraps up episode 99. We will be back at the end of this week, so this weekend. Remember to wash your hands, stay hydrated, and be good to one another.
We'll see you soon.